Shalom and Shana Tova. I'm Rabbi John Spira Savet here at Temple Beth Abraham in Nashua. To those who may be seeing this from somewhere far away who I don't know, and welcome. This is a short webinar that I wanted to put together on some of the big ideas, a few core concepts that relate to the high holidays that are coming up. And I realized that when we talk about some of these things as a conceptually, we just discuss them, that that we're in one part of our mind. And we want to try to bring this to our souls and our spirits and our lives and how we act. And just as a way to start to put us into that frame, I want to begin by sounding the shofar. And I want to give you, actually, for each of the ideas that I want to talk about, something that connects to this shofar, so you can maybe link it when you hear the shofar, either during the course of the month or when you're on services, hopefully, in Rosh Hashanah and in Yom Kippur. So I have several big ideas, and I want to teach them to you really by means, first of all, of a word or a phrase in Hebrew, and then to talk about it a little bit. And the first idea of this season is called Teshuvah. Let me show you the word on the screen. Here we go. Teshuvah is a Hebrew word which means turning back or going back. It can mean that in a very literal way. And the idea of teshuvah, it means a few possible things related to the season. It can mean going back to a path that you have strayed from. It can mean going back to yourself. To your true self inside, or to the basic things, the basic principles that you have lived by in the past, or that you think you should be living by, or that you know you should be living, know that you should be living by. Teshuvah can also mean going back to a specific wrong that you may have done, or a specific flaw in your person, to isolate that and to go back to it. So Rambam, Rabbi Moses Maimonides, he taught that the proof of having done teshuvah, having actually gone back and repaired, is if you go back to the exact situation that you were in when you acted one way, and you go back and you act the right way because you've chosen not to do what you did before. And one of the things that I like about this teaching about teshuvah is that it connects two things that I think are very important. One is the idea that teshuvah is often, probably most frequently, something that we do one thing at a time or one act at a time. And because it can be very daunting to think about, you know, fixing myself or changing the way I am. But teshuvah can be isolating one particular thing and going back to that. And connected to that, I think, is this question, philosophical question, about free will. We know that we have tendencies to act a certain way. We have habits that are ingrained in us, the way that we tend to be or handle certain situations, predispositions. Some of that may be just our basic personality, those things that maybe don't change. Can be even to our genetics, the things that we learned or were ingrained in us from a very young age. But the idea of free will is that one thing at a time, we can actually recognize that. We can even recognize what we're up against in ourselves. And then we can make a decision in that moment to override our tendencies or to override a habit because we choose to. And that's that teaching about teshuvah. Rambam Maimonides has also a very powerful teaching connected to that, that we should really see ourselves, not just at this time of the year, but all year, as though one act that we do can tip the balance of our lives toward a judgment of merit or toward a feeling that we're not worthy. And similarly, that one act can tip the balance for the whole world to be one more act that shifts the world to be half toward merit as opposed to half against. And so that's one way that we can use the idea of teshuvah, of going back to a situation that wasn't satisfying or we feel turned out wrong or we know turned out wrong, and go back to that. And so the shofar, I think, when we listen to it with the idea of teshuvah in mind, it represents something that may be calling to us from somewhere else. It's something that we can go toward, saying, here's the way, it's over here. I hear the shofar over there. I want to walk toward that. The second concept that is important for this season is called Cheshbon HaNefesh. Cheshbon HaNefesh means literally soul accounting or self accounting. Cheshbon is from a word that means thinking or even computation or accounting. And Nefesh is the soul or the self. And this really is, if it sounds like it's the language of accounting and those kinds of things, it really is. It comes from the language of charts and accounts and analysis of ourselves and our lives. We're supposed to, especially during the month of Elul, the month leading to Rosh Hashanah, we're supposed to go through our souls and go through ourselves, take a kind of inventory and do a kind of analysis. Some of the practices of Musar, the Jewish ethical self-improvement movement that has been important over the last couple hundred years, are in fact to write things down. And some of these teachings were the basis of or fed back and forth to something like the, say, the Franklin Planner system, which we know maybe from the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin, but it was particularly popular a couple decades ago in business and organizational circles. And we are supposed to do this. This is maybe the opposite of what I said before about tshuva, one act at a time. But one practice that we have, even if it's not to actually act, but just to get ourselves ready, we can do this ourselves without having to take the risk of sharing this with other people, is to start by doing that kind of inventory, first individually within ourselves, then as we think about ourselves and our own family, we think about ourselves and our circles of friends, ourselves in our community, ourselves and how we have related to the world, and ourselves and our relationship to God. So the shofar, when we think about Cheshbon HaNefesh, is really a jolt, because this is a daunting task. And Rambam, Maimonides again, says that one of the basic messages of the shofar is to wake up and to be ready, to be jolted into action. And in order to do this, and really, if we're not already in the habit of thinking about all facets of our lives this way, we need that kind of jolt in order to go ahead. The third key idea I would describe through the Jewish words and concepts called slicha u'mechila. These are two words that mean forgiveness in a couple of different dimensions. It can be the seeking of forgiveness and the giving of forgiveness. In Jewish tradition, forgiveness is a process. We have to ask forgiveness by actually owning up, by saying the words, this is what I think I did to you, that hurt you, that harmed you. Slicha and mechila involves making things right. And then asking the other person to acknowledge that, that you asked for forgiveness, that you've named the wrong, and asking that person to be soothed, to be at peace. So it is, slicha is a two-way process. And the obligation starts with the person who has done something wrong. Not with the person who's carrying the hurt. There are actually other teachings in Judaism that relate to that. But it's on the person, if you have done something, to go and to approach them and say, this is what I think I've done. Have I done this? And I acknowledge that this hurts you. And the tradition is that you have to go to a person three times. They don't have to forgive you right away. And if you go three times with sincerity and the other person doesn't acknowledge it, then they become in the wrong and you fulfilled your obligation. It's not a rote thing. And I know a lot of people talk about going up to other people and say, well, if I've done something in the course of this year that has hurt you, please forgive me. And that's not really what this process is in mind. It's certainly better than nothing. But you have to say what it is that you think you did. That word slicha may be familiar if you know Hebrew or you're in any conversational Hebrew. Slicha is the word, as the term in modern Hebrew for excuse me or I'm sorry that happened, just kind of casual. So it's a familiar word. But the other half of that phrase was mechila. Let me put it on the screen again. And mechila has kind of a different sense. In the Talmud, the expression relates to giving up one's honor. And I think there's an acknowledgement in the process of forgiveness that both sides, both parties are vulnerable and are unsettled when something that had been wrong that had happened is brought out into the open. It's unsettling certainly for the person who says, you know, I have to acknowledge and that I was small in that moment. And it can be hard for the person who's hearing that to suddenly be put on the spot and have to make a decision. And both parties lose something temporarily when this conversation actually happens. That's the sense of what is known in the Talmud as mochel al kvodo, losing one's honor in the moment in the process of making something right. And both sides have to be able and willing to accept that with the knowledge and the faith that by a process of forgiveness, they can start again and return to a place where both feel whole in the relationship. And I think in terms of forgiveness, of slicha and mechila, that the shofar represents a pure sound. It's a communication that's coming from deep in the heart and the soul, and it's not couched in any other terms than what's authentic and what is sincere. The next big idea that I want to mention is actually the name of a prayer. And it's a prayer in the High Holidays that is called Unetane Tokev, which means we acknowledge the power. And you may not know this prayer by name, but you may be familiar with the imagery in it. It's the prayer that describes scene of judgment, where God is seated on a seat of judging, and all of our acts of every single person are brought out as if in a book, written down in our own handwriting, attested to by ourselves and by God. And then there is a judgment, apparently, according to the words of this prayer, based on what we've done, of our destiny for the next year, who will live and who will die, who will be tranquil and who will be troubled, who will be rich and who will be poor. And the prayer ends by saying that there are three things that can take a severe judgment the following year and can soften it or even reverse it. And those three things are tshuva, which we talked about, returning, turning back, tefillah, which is prayer, a spiritual concentration, and tzedakah, which is giving, to help other people. So there's a lot in this particular image of the prayer which is hard theologically. It's not the way that I feel in a direct sense that the world works. But I want to highlight one thing in this prayer, which I think is why it's one of the core concepts. And it's the imaging of us coming face-to-face with our own death in the coming year, of knowing that our lives were a gift in the year that we had them, they're fragile, and that we face our own possibility of death in the coming year. Yom Kippur, the holiday, is specifically about that. We fast, we cease the physical activities of our body. We dress up and we act like corpses and like angels. Traditionally, you're supposed to dress in white and not wear leather shoes or maybe shoes at all. And we act out this part of someone who has died and maybe is going to the next world. And then we're supposed to come out on Yom Kippur on the other side as people who have seen that, who've come to the brink of that and have been transformed in the process. My colleague, Rabbi Sharon Brous, at a congregation called Ikar in Los Angeles, mentioned in a sermon, a TED talk by a woman named Jane McGonigal, who asked whether the kind of transformation that some people grow from as a result of a challenge or a tragedy in their lives, do we actually have to have the tragedy happen? Or can we actually just simulate it in some way? And Yom Kippur is that simulation, coming face to face with death. And the Unetane Tokev prayer and all of that imagery of having our lives be on the line, that's what we're talking about. We say that our lives are in the balance. They're in the balance at every time, but we focus our attention on that. And we have to do something about it, and we can through these acts of tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah, by turning back, by doing these practices that we're talking about, by using the prayer setting and the prayers themselves to focus and concentrate ourselves and to bring us together to support each other in that process. And by tzedakah, by making sure we're out in the world, making the world better. And the shofar connected to that prayer really is the shofar of majesty. It's the approach of a king, of a power that is coming, the power that reminds us that these are the rules that we're supposed to live by. And that there's power in the universe that is greater than us, that determines whether we live or whether we die. The last thing that I want to mention here is the term that is familiar. It is the term Kippur, obviously the name of the holiday, Yom Kippur. In Hebrew, Kippur, or the same root, kapara, you hear it in the prayers as well. The word that's translated as atonement, whatever that means. Actually, that's an English coinage from the Middle Ages that refers to being at one. And it may refer in that sense to the community coming together to be at one, or people who are divided from each other coming together. But it also, I think, has a meaning of restoring. And Kippur is a kind of image. It's maybe a little more abstract than what I've been talking about before. But it refers to the ceremony in the Torah and in the ancient temple. And the idea of the Yom Kippur ceremony back when there was a temple, but there was one place, was that over the course of the year, everything wrong that happened, every wrong that was committed between people or within a person, would cause there to be a kind of residue which gathered up on top of the ark, the box in the Holy of Holies, this hidden away central place in the temple where God's original words were inscribed and stored. And eventually enough of those wrongs would create a barrier, almost a barrier between earth and heaven, a barrier between us and God. And there would need to be some kind of cleansing and restoration so we could go back and have access to those words and those thoughts and that connection between ourselves and God. So there was a ceremony in the Torah of a ritual cleansing of this place. And in the time of the Second Temple, particularly the Roman period, this was the one time a year when the name of God was pronounced. The name that we don't know how to say anymore, with the Hebrew letters Yod, He, Vav, He, which really may mean the essence of being. And those words would be said by the high priest near the Ark in the presence of the tablets of the covenant. And after that, that word, which wasn't said during the year, would be allowed to be said and heard so people could have it. It would be restored to its grandeur, and people just wouldn't use the word God the way that we sometimes do in casual or inaccurate conversation. And Kippur is this resetting. And I think in that sense, the shofar is like the all clear signal, saying that the end, and we do blow the shofar at the end of Yom Kippur, to say that we're in the state now of purity. We walk into the new year with nothing bad on our record at all. And we can go forward clean and clear ourselves and everybody who's around us. And we can try to preserve that as we go forward. So these are the big ideas, and I'll show them to you one more time so you can take a look at the words. The idea of tshuva, of turning back and going back to our individual actions and individual things about ourselves that we can go and work on trying to change for the same situation in the future. The idea of cheshbon ha-nefesh, of taking an inventory and doing an accounting just to ourselves of who we are and the all facets of our lives. Slicha u'mechila, the process of really getting down to actually asking someone for forgiveness, the uncomfortable process of making things right and being willing to be vulnerable and to make someone else vulnerable in order to come out and rebuild a relationship for the future. The unetana tokef, the powerful prayer in which we talk about our lives being in the balance and face our own death as if it's a tragedy that has happened, to try to come out on the other side with all of the awareness and all the gratitude and appreciation for the power of our lives in the new year. And the idea of Kippur, of a restoration and of a fresh start. So I hope that these are a little helpful to you as you think about the high holidays, as you're doing your own thinking and preparing and talking and ultimately coming to be in a service in Rosh Hashanah and in Yom Kippur. Now, having learned them, we have to go out and to do them. I wish everyone a Shana Tova u'metukah, a good and a sweet new year.